If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we have a very special guest, author Dedeker Winston, whose first book, The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory, Everything You Need to Know About Open Relationships, Non-Monogamy, and Alternative Love,
comes out today.
Go buy it on Amazon. You can find it in Barnes & Noble. Where else can they find it?
I think you can order from Target, too.
Okay.
What?
Sweet.
Yeah.
Go ask your local mom-and-pop bookshop and support local businesses.
They'll pre-order it.
Yes.
Yep.
Support
yes.
it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. This is the book right here. Emily
here
and I.
Too.
Emily and I are some of the very lucky people who were shipped our pre-order copies early by Amazon.
Thank you, Amazon.
I know there's some other of you out there. So for those of you who this might be your first episode of ours that you're listening to, Dedeker is one of the hosts of this show.
Normally I'm not on this side of being interviewed.
Yes, but this is a very special interview for her about her book that's
yes.
just come out, and that Emily and I have both just finished reading yesterday. Right?
Well,
this morning? Did you finish this
yeah.
morning?
But the nice thing about this interview is that Dedeker, we have compiled a list of questions that Dedeker knows nothing about.
Oh,
usually
yes.
she is privy to the questions that we are going to ask an interviewee, but
right.
At this point, that is not going to happen.
That's why I'm drinking a martini,
no,
for
exactly.
those of you who aren't watching the video, because I'm actually
Jason
really
and I
nervous.
Are one martini in as well, however.
Yes.
I'm really nervous yeah. about the questions you guys are going to ask me, and I'm not entirely sure why. I think it's because...
You shouldn't be. No, we love your book.
Right.
Well, I'm ready.
So, yeah. So, to start out, could you introduce yourself?
Yes.
Rather than me trying to, you know, come up with your list of achievements,
mm-hmm.
could you give us a quick introduction about who you are and why they should check out your book?
Goodness. My name is Dedeker Winston, for those of you who haven't listened to this podcast before. I work as a relationship coach who specializes in doing one-on-one coaching, counseling sessions for people who are transitioning into non-monogamy or who are, you know, needing a little bit of guidance with non-monogamy. And I wrote a book. Sorry, I'm going to be a bad guest.
No, you'll be a great
guest. You guys
are
going to regret the day that you asked Dedeker Winston to come on your podcast.
Never.
Anyway, yeah, so this is my first book, The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory, and what a thrill ride it has been. It's been about 2 years from inception to fruition.
Wow.
And yeah, it has been like, I don't know, like raising a child, maybe, or like having a baby. Like, I don't know, I've never done anything like this in my life before.
Well, it's clear from reading it that a lot of research went into it as well, that it's
yes.
not just kind of a person's ramblings or their thoughts
oh, God,
about this.
No.
It's a very well researched and well put together book. Did you want to jump to
yes.
a question real quick?
So I have a quote to read after this question. Which I loved, but I wanted to ask you, why write a book on polyamory, and why specifically for women? Because clearly you felt the need to do that with the lovely title,
yes.
and we just wanted to know exactly mm-hmm. why that was.
Okay, well, with the women thing specifically, initially when I started writing kind of the rough outline of this book, it was just going to be a book on polyamory.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that, you know, obviously there have already been books written on polyamory, and I'm going to have to find some kind of unique voice or unique angle to bring to this, but I wasn't sure what yet. And then I forget why this happened, but one day, like, I was in the bookstore and I picked up an issue of Cosmo. And I started flipping through it and was just, like, physically nauseated
mm-hmm.
by the dating advice that was in Cosmo. And, you know, I started looking at a couple other women's magazines and was just, like, seriously just, like, so put off by the advice that was being given to young women about their relationships, you know, really disempowering, you know, things about like how long you should ignore his text message before getting back to him. You know, the like right manipulative things you have to say and do in order to get him to settle down, you know, like just this stuff that's like kind of putting women in these positions of not actually having a lot of power or a lot of agency. And so it was kind of combined with that, that I knew that I wanted to write a book about polyamory, but also something that treated women as their own free agents rather than just kind of operating in this really powerless world. And so, yeah, you know, so that's one part of it. The other part of it is that, you know, both systems of empowerment and of disempowerment, specifically for women, are perpetuated through women as well, you know. To give a controversial example, you know, a woman who wears a burqa, like there wasn't a man who put a gun to her head and told her she had to wear a burqa. Like she's wearing a burqa because her mother told her, like, this is what you do. And her aunts told her, this is what you do. And we see that with slut shaming as well. That, like, it's not just men who slut shape women. It's women who slut shape other women as well. And so I thought about that from the same way of like, well, if I want to promote a good idea, like agency, like independence, like relationship choice, I think that it does lie with women as well. Yeah. If women make this more normal and more acceptable, then I think the rest of the world can follow.
I wanted to read a quick quote from your book that is specifically on polyamory and potentially like an answer to this question. But you said people in alternative relationships don't yet have the benefit of a culture chock full of role models, media, books, and movies demonstrating how healthy non-monogamous relationships should go. There are a lot of people with a lot of questions and not enough established answers. And I liked the fact that this is a book kind of at least, you know, beginning to give those answers in a very eloquent and very well, you know, produced and thought out way.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, something that we've talked about on this podcast before is the fact that, you know, having a support network around you when there are issues in your relationship, in your non-monogamous relationship, is a very precious thing because you can't, you don't necessarily have the same outlets that, like, monogamous folk have. You know, you can't, you know, just talk to your coworker over lunch about it, or maybe you can't go to your sibling or your parent necessarily. That, yeah, being able to provide more role models, more professionals, more answers in general, I think makes this a lot more accessible to more people.
For sure. If I can change topics a little bit, something that, so the book as a whole is kind of an overview of polyamory and open relationships and kind of that whole spectrum of everything that goes into it, much like the book The Ethical Slut or possibly More Than Two, that they're kind of in that guidebook sort of format of like, here's some things to think about, here's all the stuff you need to know. What I like about this is that it is a much more modern take on those while still being accessible, while still being sort of fun, light, humorous, easy to read, that it's not like this technical manual of all this stuff you need to know. It's
like
more
Sex at Dawn kind of is.
Right. That it's not,
which we love, by the way.
That it's not this kind of dry presentation of research or even More Than Two, which is super thorough, but gets really, it can get really hard to get through it all because there's so much that this kind of strikes that balance between being, you know, covering a lot of stuff, but still being approachable, which I think is, it's a great book for people who are new to polyamory. But one thing I want to talk about that I especially like about this book is that it includes a chapter on the unwritten history of polyamory, which is something that, you know, I was with you when you were working on that chapter, and it's something that at the time it was fascinating to hear about, and then also reading it, and I've read a few different versions of it as it's been written, but I keep coming back to how much I love this chapter because it's something that it's, you know, it's presenting actual historical information and research in a way, you know, kind of, it almost felt out of place for me at first with the rest of the book, which is kind of more about how to do relationships, and this is this sort of like, well, why do I need to go through this whole history? But I really loved how just kind of how fun it was to read and to go, oh my gosh, I had no idea that these people were polyamorous or that this community was that, or that my silverware is polyamorous, right? Like that I didn't know those things. And my question for you was, in writing that, like, was there a place in researching this unwritten history of polyamory that for you was the most kind of surprising, the most like holy crap moment in your writing that section.
And I guess, well, and I also have a follow up, like what was your research process for this book?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, to address your comment earlier, I thought for sure this was going to be the first chapter to get cut. Because it is kind of like, you know, this is generally like a guidebook, and like there's suddenly this big old like history nerd chapter.
Yeah,
right.
And so I'm really glad that it didn't, because it was one of my favorite ones to write, actually. Mm-hmm. So as far as the most interesting, my God, I mean, I still feel like there are so many gaps in it that I didn't hit as far as history. I particularly loved learning about, there were a couple ones that I really liked researching, which was the Native American practices.
Yeah, I found that fascinating.
I wish I could have written more about that, because a lot of the Native American tribes practice some form of non-monogamy.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And actually, it goes in line with a lot of the observations they made in Sex at Dawn, that historically, researchers will observe like primitive tribes and see something strange in their relationships, but still find some way to make it look like monogamous marriage.
Fascinating.
Right.
And I think that with Native American history, that's happened many times, without researchers actually seeing, oh, no, what's actually going on here is someone sharing a husband, or no, what's actually going on here is two bros swapping wives. You know, and so that was really, really interesting to me. And I was sad that I couldn't include more on that. And then the other one was the Bloomsbury Group.
Right,
The group of intellectuals and writers in England in the mid-1800s who were all kind of like cohabiting and in this little like polycule together. And I don't know. Right. I think that things like that are so surprising and exciting to me, because it's people who are very smart and very influential. Doing something like they were in their creative lives, doing something out, you know, against the grain and outside the lines, and also in their personal lives. That's really interesting to me. And the research process was just like pouring through so many academic archives for hours and hours and hours and hours. And like at the end of a day of researching and writing, I would come to Jace and I'd be like, Jace, like my brain can't contain all this information. Can I like talk to you about everything I learned today?
How cool.
And that would include things that didn't end up in the book, but I was just like, I just gotta tell somebody about this crazy thing that happens in sub-Saharan Africa. Like, isn't this crazy?
Oh my god, that's so cool.
Yeah, that I have to like dump all this information onto Jace. Like, I think that, you know, if I could have written an entire book on
history.
That'll be another book.
Possibly,
at some point.
Yeah.
How cool. So let's see. I wanted to ask about the homework for each section, because the book is broken up into obviously many chapters, many parts, and you have this really awesome homework at the end of each section.
You think it is?
Well, no, it's great, because it's amazing. I mean, it's not just like journal about something for 20 minutes or whatever. It's really like speaking about and like thinking very specifically about things in your life or moments or like you know, past relationships that have happened, and in talking about things with people, with your current partners or your parents or siblings. And I just wanted to ask, like, how did you come up with all of the homework?
You know, some of it were exercises that I had developed with my clients. Actually, most of them were things that I developed with my clients to, like, really uncover, you know, what are these underlying beliefs or underlying assumptions about various things. There was this... So Franklin Vo, I talked to Franklin Vo on Twitter a couple of times during the book writing process, you know, usually in freak out moments of like, I don't know what I'm doing, or like, what did you do about this? Or like, how do I handle this? You know, and he was a total trooper, was like very encouraging and would answer all my questions. And at one point he said this great phrase. He said that, we don't read books as they are. We read books as we are.
That's amazing.
Which totally makes sense that, you know, if you read a book at different stages in your life, you get very different things out of it.
Of course,
interpret it in very different ways. And so I think that I really wanted to build in some way of getting people to like kind of check in with themselves and get a sense of like, what is it that I'm getting out of this? Like, what is it that's coming up for me? Because I think that is very true, especially in a book like this, that can be challenging to what your beliefs already are, or what your practices already are. To have the opportunity to check in and just see like, okay, what is the state of me? You know, what is going on here? And I would hope that, you know, if you did read the book 5 years later, that your responses in the homework would be very different.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Yes.
So, Jay, say a question.
So one of the parts that something that I underlined in my copy, which is now has all sorts of marks and things all over it, is in the section where you're talking about some of the things that people will do to try to prevent themselves from getting hurt or to preempt problems or to try to solve jealousy that don't actually work, that actually can do a lot more harm than good. I thought that was a really interesting section to include, kind of as a comprehensive thing. And one of those that we've talked about in the past on this show as well is the concept of veto, of being able to have veto privilege to say, you know, your partner's dating someone and you can just say, I don't like that person, you have to break up with them because I'm your primary partner. I'm going to tell you have to do that and you have to do it no matter what because that's the rule we set. That's what we agreed on. And it's something that's, you know, people argue about this a lot. I think that we tend to come down pretty hard on the side that doing that ultimately will actually hurt not only that relationship, which has been vetoed, obviously, but will actually hurt your own relationship much more than anything it saves it from. And what I really liked in the book was this analogy that you made about imagining if you had a veto rule with your mother.
Yeah.
And I thought this was
fascinating. No, hang on. Did you like it? Because when I first pitched it to you, you didn't like it so much.
Oh, fascinating.
I don't think that I quite understood where you were going with it at first.
I see.
Because what it is it's about...
I liked it.
Okay, good.
Saying, you know, you have this connection with your mother, and so you make this agreement that she can veto anyone that you date if that person seems to her to be coming between your relationship with her. Now, if anyone has had a mom and dated or been a mom with a child who's dating, I feel like it always feels like anyone they date is taking them away from you. So it's a very easy thing to imagine that mom going, you're attached to this person. That's threatening to me. I'm going to veto it. And then if you imagine your mother doing that and you actually enforcing it, how's that going to affect that relationship between you and your mother? If she's the one who took away something that you cared about purely because she wasn't totally comfortable with a relationship that wasn't even hers. I thought that was a really interesting... I liked the way that that came together in the final book.
Yeah, I mean, obviously their relationship with your parents is a very different relationship than any relationship you would have with a romantic partner. However, you know, that example came up because I was thinking about, like, you know, for some reason, a lot of people feel like veto power just is this very natural thing. Like, well, naturally, I'm going to give all this decisive power to my romantic partner. But that's not a power that we give, like, to our friends.
No.
You know, mm-hmm. we don't let our friends veto whatever new friends we might have.
Right.
With our parents, it's interesting because that is one of the situations where I think we see throughout history these examples of stories, both fictional and non-fictional, of mm-hmm. parents vetoing romantic relationships.
Right.
And that never ends well. You know, even just the classic fairy right. tale of the king who tells his daughter, no, you can't marry this peasant. Romeo and Juliet of, right. no, you can't marry a Montague or whatever. Like, that right. doesn't end well. And so, of course, we see those examples and we're like, yeah, sure, true love prevails.
Right.
But for some reason, we look at giving veto to a romantic partner, and some people kind of think like, oh no, that makes sense. Like, that makes yeah. us feel good. That makes us feel safe.
Right.
So that's where that example came from. I do get, you know, the parent relationship is very different, but yeah. I think mm-hmm. that's something that speaks to people about, and they can see more clearly about how they would feel mm-hmm. if a parent stepped in to dictate what their relationships would be like.
Yeah.
I thought also something that I liked about the analogy that you actually didn't get to in the book, and maybe you could add this in the second edition or something, I don't know, is just the idea, though, that in that analogy of giving them veto power to just unilaterally decide that your relationship needs to end is not a healthy thing, and we see how bad this ends in those mm-hmm. stories. But at yeah. the same time, if you're dating someone that your parent is like, hey, like, I'm really not happy with how this person treats you, or something like that, it's not going to be an instant like, oh, well, you said that, I have to do it.
Yeah.
But you do take that into account, mm-hmm. you
yeah.
know? Or you don't, but you're consciously being like, okay, I understand that I'm going to do that. And I
yeah.
think sometimes when people want that in their relationship, there's kind of this assumption that your partner is just going to entirely ignore you as if you haven't known them as long as you have. And if they don't value your opinion, if you're like, hey, like, I'm actually really concerned about this person that you're seeing. Because that's always the counterexample.
Yeah.
It's like, what about when there's abuse?
Uh-huh.
What about when there's
sure.
some really bad situation? It's like, well, are you assuming that your partner just
doesn't get it?
Doesn't
yeah.
take you seriously at all?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
like doesn't listen to you? Because
yeah.
then maybe you have a bigger problem
yeah.
on your hands.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And I think the analogy of a parent also kind of works with that as
that's
well.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway, did you have...
Yes.
The next one?
Yes. So okay, Jason and I are in this book somewhat. And
is this the crying section?
No, that'll be later.
Okay, cool.
No, but like we obviously lived through many of the things that you spoke about in this book,
mm-hmm.
And it was intense to read. I can't even imagine how
intense
it was to write.
Yes.
But what gave you the strength to kind of go back and trudge through all of that again, and then, you know, write it down for the whole world to see?
Putting it off to the last minute.
Okay. That makes sense.
To be totally honest.
Oh,
yeah, some of the more intense sections literally were stuff that, like, I put off to the last minute. Because I didn't want to go back
yeah.
there. You know, I'd been spending all this time trying to heal from a lot of this and trying
right.
to not obsess over this. And so then to be like, well, I got to relive this and think about the details
mm-hmm.
and think about what needs to be included and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, I really didn't want to go there. And so a lot of those sections were, you know, last minute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a particularly vulnerable time in, like, all of
yes,
our lives.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But, you know, the very specific thing, because honestly, there were some things in some particular stories
mm-hmm.
that it got to the point of me being like, maybe I just shouldn't include these. Maybe I don't need to write about this. Maybe I don't need to write about this at all, you know?
Wow.
And maybe I should just leave it. Maybe this is too much about me, you know? It was
right.
me really trying to not go to these spaces. And there's this writer, Anne Lamott, and she wrote this book called Bird by Bird, and it's
mm-hmm.
a book on the writing process.
Yeah.
She teaches writing and has written many books. And so it's all just kind of about the philosophy surrounding the writing process.
Right.
And so I was reading that concurrently while writing, and it was, you know, so helpful to me. But there was one line in the book that really got me, and she, what's the specific quote? It's something along the lines of that, you know, if you've, gone through some kind of hardship, if you've escaped from out underneath somebody else's thumb,
mm-hmm.
you know, write down the truth of that and take the risk of setting somebody else free.
Wow.
Yeah, no, and when I read that, I was just like, oh, you know,
yeah.
God damn it, Anne Lamott, you called me out. And so, and no, when I read that, that was the moment when I was
mm-hmm.
like, no, like I need to share this. You know, I need to think about, you know, what if there is someone else who is in a situation very similar to what I went through?
Yeah.
That needs to read this right now, that needs to know how this went down, you know? And so, I mean, it sounds super noble. But that was the motivating thing, was like taking the risk to set somebody else free, you know, even though it's very vulnerable and very uncomfortable. But maybe it'll manifest in some good for somebody else.
I was going to say that in reading the book, I mean, I've said before that I think that Franklin Vo's The Game Changer is one of the most important books that poly people could read.
Yeah.
And it's not an instructional manual.
Yeah,
it
totally.
Is just a personal story. It's just his memoir of his time of being polyamory and changing his opinions about hierarchy and all of those things and veto rules and all of that. And I found that in this book too, that in chapters like 7 through 10 or whatever, where you kind of have more of those personal stories, as much as for me they were painful to read, some of them, but I found myself being like, this personal story is even that much, is so much more compelling to me to explain the things that you spent the previous five chapters explaining.
Yeah.
That to me it was like just hearing a personal story of how things can really go down and how you can get to a place with the best of intentions and end up causing a lot of hurt and not saving that relationship. And to me, that was huge. And I hope that people find that same thing with that section, because I did find that to be like, wow, like this is a story that not a lot of people share.
Yeah.
They preach about like, you should do it this way or you should do it this other way. But actually just sharing a very personal, very true story of how that happened for you, I think is actually a very powerful thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're all learning. And and it's very clear. I mean, we get on this podcast and we do this every week and talk about the great things that we've learned and stuff, but it was lovely to like have that in there and really talk about, hey, I've gone through so much in order to get to this point.
Yeah.
And obviously we know firsthand what that was. And I did want to ask, how has writing this book changed your polyamorous life? I know that's a loaded
big question.
Yeah.
Well, I've yet to test this, but I imagine that it's going to make going on first dates much more interesting. Now.
Guess what? I wrote a book.
Just be like,
here
I
it is.
A book. If you want to be in a relationship with me, maybe you should read.
Yeah. Wow.
It's kind of like, instead of us having 10 conversations over the next couple
why
days,
don't you
maybe
just
read
the
book and then on the second date, we can talk about it.
Yeah. That's great.
I haven't tested that out yet. As far as how it's affected me now, good golly.
Miss Molly.
Yeah.
I think it really has made my communication better. And I think it really did make me confront a lot of things inside myself. Because, I mean, like, I'd be writing about stuff during the day, and then if I got into an argument at night with one of my partners, it's like, ugh, like, I was just writing about how to not do this earlier in the day. And so I think that's definitely a big factor of, like, well, it's kind of like I've compiled all the knowledge that I had, at least at that particular moment. And there's something very affirming about that of like, okay, like I know this to be true for me. And so this is something that I can continue to live by and that I should continue to live by. It's really difficult, I found, with writing a book, because it is just like a snapshot, you know, even in the number of months since submitting the manuscript, I've learned so many things where I'm like, oh, like I wish I could have put this in the book. I'm like, oh, this would be another good thing to put in the book.
Number two,
which is actually why it's so great to have this podcast, because it is a medium where we can take new things, or if I find a new idea or a new thought, that we can discuss it and put it out there. Instead of me just continually revising this book for years to come, which will probably happen anyway.
I did want to talk quickly about each of our personal experiences with reading this book. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to?
Sure, yeah. No,
okay,
just
go first.
Yeah, like I said, there were some pretty emotional parts for me personally, being mentioned in the book, and thinking back to those stories and those days. But also, I do think it just kind of hit on a lot of these fairly universal experiences of thinking that you've got something figured out and realizing that you don't. I know that for me, you know, going from being engaged and thinking that I had it figured out. Jesus. And that, yeah. Right?
It's still weird that happened once upon a time with you.
Right. This was like, you know, 10 years ago now. Yeah. But my devastation after that was partly the sadness of losing that relationship, but also partly this shame at having been so wrong that I felt embarrassed about it. And I think that that sort of personalness of this book, of that it's come through learning from mistakes rather than just kind of making some decisions and saying like, oh, I got it figured out, or this has always been easy for me, or I've never been a jealous person, or those things, but saying, no, I've worked through these things and I'm still working on them. Here's what I've learned so far. Mm-hmm. For me, it was a really useful, like, I think that was a really powerful sort of book to write. Mm-hmm. And it's also a book that I personally am really pleased to have it in existence, to be able to recommend it to other people. Because I think it's been a long time since a real comprehensive guidebook of polyamory has been put out that is really accessible, that is really approachable. But I think is also very modern. It's about what polyamory is now, not what polyamory was 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. But it is very current into what's going on in the culture, especially toward the end of the book when you talk about like what's next for polyamory, what's the future.
So and that, talking about underrepresented groups, I think, is something that so many books out there don't include. And I was so proud that you put that in there.
That was so difficult because of the fact that it's like it's impossible to cover
everything.
All that's missed in the polyamorous community, you know, like, and hopefully, you know, there are other authors who pick up that torch because, you know, we still need someone who talks about a, you know, a perspective of polyamory and disability or polyamory and race or, you know, polyamory in any number of, you know, different communities or disadvantages or whatever, that we still do need those voices. And obviously as a white girl, there's only so much that I can do to speak from those voices, but I am hoping that, you know, that this helps to continue to create that space for authors who can speak, you know, from underrepresented groups to kind of come to the forefront with that.
Okay. I'm going to need to like pull myself together right now. Sorry. Anyone who knows me well knows that I'm just a big fucking sob. Essentially, just like, reading your book made me want to have all the people in my life be able to, like, rewrite something because I'm going to quote. I know, I'm sorry.
This is terrible radio.
I'm so sorry.
Everyone's crying.
Yeah, it's just like to quote Little Women, which is one of my fucking favorite books ever. Reading your book was like opening a window into your heart, truly, because, you know, like,
how'd you know about the Little Women thing with me too?
Oh God, I love that book so much. The fact that like I got to know you through your writing deeper and more vulnerably and more specifically than I think I ever have before. And that was fascinating and important to me specifically and really great. So thank you for that. And I am so proud to know you and to know you as intimately as I do, because getting to be a part of this in the small way that I was is huge in my life and hugely important. So thank you for doing that. I do think it will change the face of polyamory and become like a new, you know, book and manual for people out there. And it's really incredible. And so congratulations and well done. And yeah. Sorry.
We don't normally do this to our guests.
No, I know.
So you know.
Just like sobbing outright. Sobbing. Yeah, anyways.
Okay, well now that we took a break to wipe off all the tears.
Yeah. We did want to leave you with the classic multi-amory question of what is something that you can do right now to create a positive change in your relationship? Obviously, you wrote an entire book on the subject.
Yeah,
however,
one thing that you would like to tell people who are new to polyamory or who are newish to this, just one piece.
Oh gosh, it's so hard. I think that I would probably direct people to discover the most effective system for emotional management that works for you. You know, for me, in my polyamorous journey, it's been meditation. You know, meditation has really helped me get through the difficult times or really, really enjoy the good times. But that may not be the case for everybody. It could be therapy. It could be some kind of self-care. It could be some kind of, you know, personal development workshop or whatever. But yeah, I think it's that. It's kind of like setting up what your own little home base is going to be for yourself that you can retreat to when, like, things are bad in order to care for yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's very clear.
Yeah, no, for me, it's writing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, like, journaling is good, too.
That's given me more clarity than, like, anything else. Yeah.
Or awesome. even if your emotional management is, like, your favorite video game for 20 minutes.
Sure.
Like, the one action that you know that you can fall back on that will help get you into, like, a more grounded space. And just having that always. I think that's good for any relationship, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you so much. Your book comes out today.
Yay.
It's called The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory. You can just Google it and find it. But if they don't want to Google it and they just want to go straight there, where can people go to find out where to get your book and more about you?
They can go to smartgirlsguidetopolyamory.com. Mm. That will redirect to the special book page on my website. They can go to the Smart Girls Guide to Polyamory Facebook page. Or they can follow me on Twitter at Dedeker Winston. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to the Multiamory website. There's probably all over the place.
We also have links to all of that in our show notes for this episode.
Yeah, for sure.
So you guys can go check it out, get the book. It's awesome. And like really Emily said, I also hope that this does change the face of polyamory and help to make it something that's approachable and normalizes it for a lot of people in the world.
Can I promo my giveaway really quick?
Yeah,
oh,
sure.
It's ending today, but I think it's, you know, going to end today like at midnight or something like
that. So you still have a chance.
There's still a chance, yeah. So I'm doing a giveaway right now for one signed copy of my book that someone will get for free. To enter that giveaway, you need to make a donation in any amount to a nonprofit called She Should Run. If you go to sheshouldrun.org. And what She Should Run is it's a nonprofit that's dedicated to providing education and resources and encouragement to women and girls who want to run for office. Their whole thing is about getting more women into politics.
That's great. Yeah.
Because we're 51% of the population, but in the U.S. Congress, only like 20%.
Yeah.
There's only two countries in the world that have 50% representation of women. So for people who make a donation and just like send a screenshot of their confirmation to dedeker@multiamory.com, we'll be entered into the drawing for a giveaway of The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory.
Yay.
And also, we'll all be happier because hopefully there'll be more women in office in a couple of years.
And also to tweet about it, right? You want them to spread the word.
Oh, if
and
they
share
can.
This.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Great. Yeah. Spread awareness as well as as well as donating to that organization.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We look forward to hearing from all of you who have read the book as well and getting feedback. You can send that either to Dedeker or you can send it to Multiamory at info@multiamory.com. And Dedeker will also see it that way. All right, thank you all so much. You can see more of our stuff at multiamory.com. You can follow us on Twitter at multiamory. Find us on Facebook, on Reddit. You know, we're all over the place. Instagram.
Yeah.
Got some fun Instagram stuff going on lately. Anyway, we'd love to hear from you. Get involved in the community, whether it's through Patreon or just through Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. We love interacting with you, and we hope to see you on tour.
Yay.
All right.
Woo!
Bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.